You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
With a conservative majority in Ottawa, it's no surprise that recent economic policies favor the business community. The conservatives argue that policies such as lower taxes and less environmental regulation will lead to greater overall prosperity. But prosperity for whom and at what cost? Ian Hudson is an economist at the University of Manitoba, and he is a co-author of a book called Live and Die in America, which presents a different approach to how economics intersect with human health. And he's joined me on the phone now this morning. Good morning, Ian, and welcome to the Red Eye program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Your article is titled Labor in the Time of Cholera and Cancer. And I'm wondering if you could just convey to the listeners the main thesis that you're wanting to demonstrate both in the book and in the article.
Sure. The main idea and the way where the title about cholera and cancer comes from is that the way that people die has changed historically. So people in North America, at least in around 1900s, used to die of infectious diseases, things like cholera and influenza and things like that. And they don't anymore. People now don't die of those things and live longer, and now they die of more chronic diseases like heart disease and cancer. And so the thesis that we're trying to put forward in the book is that transition has not been caused so much by medical miracles or germs and genes, what you might call the biomedical model, but has instead been largely determined through political and economic forces. So it's been determined largely through classes and powers in the economic system. So if you take one example of that, people used to die of these infectious diseases, and the usual explanation of that is that we had these infectious diseases, and once medical cures were developed, things like vaccines, we were able to sort of medically cure these diseases out of existence. But that doesn't work if you look at the evidence very clearly. The problem with that thesis is that the infectious diseases declined almost out of existence before the vaccines were even invented and distributed widely. And so you need some other explanation for why infectious disease declined in North America, well, in Europe as well. And our idea is that the reason that infectious diseases have declined was because the broad population in these countries became far less susceptible to the infectious diseases that were out there. So it wasn't the fact that there were germs floating around, but it was more the idea that people were less susceptible to the diseases from those germs. And so the reasons for that decline was that the broad-based population started to gain far more, or were much more successful in gaining the benefits of the economic system. So if you look at before roughly about 1900, that's all a little arbitrary, but about 1900, if you look at before then, the sort of power, especially in the economic and political system, resided so heavily with the firms that workers were able to benefit only in a very, very, very meagerly way. And so they lived in terrible housing conditions, they worked in horrible working conditions, their incomes were abysmally low. And if you put people in those sort of conditions, of course they're going to be very susceptible to disease. After about 1900, workers became much more successful through unionization, through the political process of being able to get a hold of some of the gains from the production process. And so as incomes increase broadly, as the public health movement lobbies for much better conditions in the city, things like clean drinking water and sanitation, and as you get a move toward greater safety in the workplace, then all of a sudden people are much less susceptible to these kind of germs that are floating around, and health improves very dramatically after that point. And so it's that accounts for the decline in infectious disease, not the wonders of medical science, although they played some roles, and certainly not just the inevitable progress of our economic system, but very real sort of conflicts and battles by and large, by the working population that wrested some of the gains from the firms and made that available to the working people.
So if I project that shorter working day, working hours, has a significant effect on health, and that is reduces the infectious disease dangers that the population faced.
That's right. I mean, basically, you had people that who had almost what we would call an epidemic constitution. They worked such long hours for so low pay and lived in such poor conditions that they were just waiting to get sick, basically.
So people today looking at infectious diseases are no longer in North America the major cause of death and illness, but they're faced with other diseases. What are those diseases, and how do they relate to your thesis?
Okay. So people these days tend to die of more chronic illness. They die of cancer, which is the big killer, but also heart disease is the other big one. These diseases have become our major killers, we're arguing, because of the change in how production was done between early capitalism that existed in around the 1900s to the production methods that are used today. So in the early 1900s, production methods were very simple. They were very labor-intensive. They weren't very technologically advanced. They didn't use too many chemical processes. The response to the rising wages that people were starting to gain for themselves in the early 1900s for firms was to try and increase productivity, because it's only through increasing productivity that you can afford to pay your workers a bit more and still maintain profitability. But that rise in productivity, although it made possible wage gains and better living standards for people, also introduced into the production process some very very hazardous techniques. So it's here that you get the chemicalization and mechanization of the workplace. And it's a lot of the chemicals that are produced and the pollution that's emitted that come from that new kind of production that is, we would argue, much of the source of death and disease today. So again, you've got the same sort of dynamics occurring today that you had even in the 1900s. There's just different balances of power, I suppose. And so you've still got illnesses, cancer and heart disease, that are caused by the production processes that we use, the way we work, the political forces that we can gather to try and deal with those things. So maybe I can just provide a couple of quick examples. So if you take something like stress and how that relates to heart disease, for example. It's usually assumed that stress is something that it resides in the executive suite. So stress is something that's felt by bosses that have to make tough decisions all the time. But what the medical evidence shows is that's not the case. At least the negative health impacts, reduced life expectancy from stress and heart disease and things like that, are far more often felt at the lower levels of the working environment. So if you think about what gives people stress and then what makes them live shorter lives because of that stress, it's things like insecure jobs, having a lack of control at the workplace, most problematically, being unemployed and the financial stress that goes with that. Those are the kinds of stress that tend to shorten people's lives and create heart disease. And so if you've got an economic system where unemployment's high, or you've got tremendous employment insecurity, or you've got a lot of people working at the sort of lower end of the job ladder without very much security or very much voice in their jobs, as you might where there's not very much unionization, then you're going to have much worse health results, even in a wealthy country. And it's that we argue is one of the big problems with American society. Similarly, if you think about the way that we as a society have tried to deal with some of the pollution problems, it's by and large through government regulation. And so the kind of regulation that we introduce And the strength of that regulation depends on, you know, basically battles in the political system between people that are negatively affected by the pollution and firms that are trying to offload their costs. And the better societies are at having strong regulation and broad regulation, the less of these sort of problematic pollutants and environmental problems that are going to be floating around.
You're proposing, I assume then, that the capitalist system is a killer by the structure of its power relations.
That's right. Although even within the capitalist system, there are very, very different forms of capitalism. It's organized in very different ways in different countries. And what we're arguing is that the United States is unique in how terrible it is. And so if you look at, for example, health indicators in the United States, they're far worse than health indicators in any other wealthy nation. And we would argue that there's two reasons for that. The first reason is exactly the one that you've just talked about, that they have a political and economic system which creates disastrous results outside, independent of what kind of healthcare system they have. And so we need to think beyond just the healthcare system when we think about people's health. We need to think about how much unemployment exists, how insecure jobs are, how much pollution exists, what sort of things are in your food, right? These are the things that we have to think about. And other nations have done a much better job at alleviating those conditions. So if you look at Sweden compared to the United States, for example, Sweden has a higher degree of unionization, they have greater income inequality, they have better job security. So all those things are true, and they have much better health results. But that's not to completely remove the healthcare system from the equation. And what we would also argue is the kind of healthcare system you've got is also not independent of these kind of battles within society. So the United States has a sort of very large component of for-profit, private healthcare insurance and delivery compared to everywhere else in the world. But that is also not independent of how their political and economic system functions. They've got a very weak working class. They've got very low unionization movements. Their union movements don't have any political representation particularly. And it is those things that drove public healthcare in almost all other countries. And so the particularly poor healthcare system in the United States that is unbelievably badly equipped to deal with their economic system that delivers poor health results to start off with is also a result of the same sort of political and economic battles within society that we would argue is true of austerity programs and their political and economic system more broadly.
Well, thank you very much for your clarification, and thank you also for the article you wrote. It's very stimulating, and I'll refer people to it.
Thank you very much for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Ian Hudson. He teaches economics at the University of Manitoba. He's co-author of the book To Live and Die in America, and also of an article. It's called Labor in the Time of Cholera and Cancer.